Do you have a dark curiosity? Follow and listen to Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Thanks, Scott. Sorry for your trouble there. And folks, how is your plant world doing? If you'd like to talk about it, simply call 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. This is Saturday morning, and we start off the garden hotline with a good gardening stroll. Then afterwards, we can discuss what is impacting your trees, your perennials, your hillside, your shrubs, your lawn, ground covers, and anything planted in your outdoors. Or we can step inside and have a look at your tropical world. From routine care and maintenance, pet impacts, specifically talking about potting mixes or soils, pruning, insect troublemakers, suspicious growth or spots, transplanting, taking cuttings, and beyond. I'll share my knowledge and help you to make a good decision. And the decision is going to be on your shoulders, of course. Please remember, this is your show, and I appreciate you having me over into your plant world. Another very important player is James. He's producing. He will be answering the phone. He just needs your first name when you call, and that's it. By the way, I'm Mike Miller. I've been hosting the Garden Hotline since 1994. And besides a Saturday morning get-together that we have, I can come into your plant world for an on-site consultation. I call it a walk and talk. You can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com, and on the homepage, there's my email address and phone number. Well, let's get strolling. This walk is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Where am I? Where Menard and Carroll Street meet, and the sidewalk rises up from that point. There's some brick pillars there, and what they declare is cardinal care. This is Tony La Russa's field. This field recognizes contributions made by Tony La Russa both on and off the baseball field. It was built for the enjoyment of all on May 27th, 2015. That's when it was dedicated. The bleachers are covered. No, the bleachers aren't covered. The dugouts are covered, though. And it's a great setting near 12th and Park Recreational Building. There's all kinds of stuff going on. The bases are permanent. How can that be? But they're there. And, of course, home plate is right there. The right field scoreboard is backdropped in the distance by the Purina Building to the north. There's yellow cushions that run on the top of all the fencing all the way around to protect the players from any kind of injury. And there's quite a few mature trees on the outside of the field, of course, not on the inside. And they range from oaks to lindens to sweet gums. Why in the world would you want to? Anyway, doesn't matter. The sky is really getting bright, so it is time for me to head towards KMOX. So again, if you have any questions, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Why don't we go ahead and just, Fred's here. Why don't we take him before we take a break? Hi, Fred.
Good morning, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We received a little Norfolk pine for Christmas, and it's still in the pot, and I'm wondering what to do with it. I want to keep it. I want to keep it growing. So what should I do with that?
Basically, it needs a lot of light. Bright sunlight. So you got to get it in a situation where it's going to get as much light as it possibly can. And obviously it's a tropical type plant. And just leave it alone for a couple years. Don't put it in a larger pot or anything. Don't transplant it. Minimize. It doesn't really need a whole lot of fertilizer. But when the days start to get longer, let's say sometime around May, you can get some fertilizer for house plants and use half the label rate and fertilize it once a month, May, June, July, and final fertilizing in August, and that's pretty much it. and just they can really take a dry circumstance. So don't be careful and don't overwater, because rotting roots is the worst thing that can happen to basically any kind of any plant, basically, but certainly house plants and anything like this, you know, which is a tree.
Okay, so it's a house plant. It doesn't go outside.
No, it doesn't go outside. It could go outside in the summertime and be on your deck or your patio or something like that, but it can't be planted in the ground here.
Okay. All right, my other question is about mold prevention. Moles are just everywhere this year. I have an injected material that would go into the tunnel. Is that a good way of preventing them?
Well, it is if they're still using that same tunnel. What they do is, I'm surprised you're seeing a lot of activity, because the ground is pretty cold still, and they tunnel towards the sound of earthworms moving. And if the ground is cold, the earthworms just don't move. So mm-hmm. I'm not exactly sure what's going on. So are you seeing piles of dirt up on the surface of your soils or on the surface of your lawn or your garden spaces?
Yeah, a long tunnel in the front. When it was warm, not now, but about 2 weeks ago when it got warm, there was a large tunnel. But now I don't see any.
Yeah, so if the injection or pretty much any kind of control, whether it be traps or injection or anything else, is going to be somewhat limited on the fact that you got to kind of watch and see where the newest activity is, and put those deterrents or killers in those particular areas, because they will abandon tunnels because they're only going to use them to a certain point. And if they're not hearing any kind of earthworm sounds underground, then they're not going to use that particular area, and they'll try a different spot when they start hearing, again, earthworms moving.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so get an active tunnel and put that stuff in there.
Right. So watch closely, and as soon as you start to see, the surface pop up, then, that's the time when you get out there and inject this.
Okay. Thanks for your help, Mike.
Sure. My pleasure. Yeah, and this, what you probably have is it smells like, to moles, earthworms, and they think it's an earthworm that's right there by chance, and then they eat it and it kills them. So just good riddance, let's put it that way. Thanks, Fred. And now let's head over to John Jard. Hi, John.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
Very good. How are you?
I have a question. We had some landscaping redone in our front yard in June, and the landscaper planted five skip laurels. They're about 4 to 5 feet high. They looked really nice. I watered them, as he said, and all summer they looked great. He told me that in the winter, like in Thanksgiving, 1st of December, I should spray them with a product called Wiltproof, which I purchased, but I discovered that one large container of Wiltproof only makes less than a gallon of material. Pretty expensive, so I returned that and got a product called Wiltstop, which made a more of a solution I could spray on all the laurels. They looked good, and now they've turned brown.
Right.
Is that normal for a laurel?
Well, all the broadleaf evergreens, which laurels are, took a real tough time when we had that early in the winter,
yes,
late fall cold spell.
Yes.
And, the broadleaf evergreens are just, they're brutal looking right now. They're really scary looking. And laurels in and of themselves are kind of marginally hardy in the first place. So
okay.
That kind of adds to the scenario of the circumstance. So there's not too much you can do. You're just going to have to wait. Probably the foliage that is brown is going to end up dropping. And hopefully the buds are still functional and they'll put out some new foliage.
Okay. Yeah, they looked great until that cold snap, and then they just started turning brown.
Right.
And I didn't know if it was what I sprayed on them, or although I sprayed it on some boxwoods, they look great. So, I guess I'll have to wait till the spring.
Yep. There's nothing you can do premature unless you want to build a greenhouse over them and see what happens.
No. Okay. Thanks for your info.
Sure.
Bye.
Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. If you have questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Back after these messages.
Information live and local. from the award-winning KMOX Newsroom.
Phone lines are waiting for you, folks. 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Boy, the forecast for the next few days with that temperature's not even getting out of the 20s. There's going to be potentially some more damage, not only to laurels or broadleaf evergreens, but some of the other plants, the deciduous-type plants, some of those buds are starting to open. The other day I was walking and I saw some magnolias, the early magnolias, and the buds weren't totally opening, but I could see that they were getting close to that. And with this temperature not even getting above freezing, in theory, in the next couple days, that's going to be rough on lots of different things. So there's not too much you can do about that. But for an insect circumstance, this time of year, there's a product called dormant oil. And you can spray the dormant oil, but always read the label because it's going to tell you if it's this temperature, don't spray it. If it's this temperature, you can. So just make sure whatever you're applying any place that you are going to go ahead and read that label. Even though some of it's not going to make much sense to you, there's going to be certain things that are going to trigger a sort of, a lightning bolt in your mind that, if I do this now, I may be causing more trouble than I'm doing good. So just keep that idea in your head that whatever you get, you're going to have to basically read the label. Let's head over to Linda's yard. Hi, Linda.
Oh, hi. I was given an amaryllis at Christmas time, and now that all the other greenery is gone, I'm seeing that the bulb is covered in like a wax, and I don't know what to do with it. I'd like to, put it in a pot.
Well, definitely the bulb, how did it actually come if it wasn't in a pot?
It has a metal prong that's inserted into the base of the bulb, and there's a circle, so it stands upright. But then the pot itself was, or the planter was covered with Christmas greenery and bows and stuff.
Whoa.
So I have this bulb now.
Yeah, hopefully the penetration was something that stuck a hole into the amaryllis bulb, that's not a good sign. So, but what you can do is just go to your favorite garden center, tell them you have an amaryllis, you want to get a relatively small plastic pot, about, probably 4 inches at the, you don't need to get anything any bigger than that, and then just put potting mix in there, make sure mm-hmm. it's potting mix, and then put it in a sunny window, and you should start to see some green foliage come out.
Yeah, it's already peeking up little green leaves.
Right.
But should I peel off this wax, or what should I do with this waxy coating on it?
I would just leave it alone because if it's on the bulb, that's not going to really impact where the foliage is coming out because you can see where the foliage is coming out of the top of it. And my only concern, again, is if it was pierced and it has a hole in it, then that's a potential rotting circumstance. So that is not the best thing that could have happened. But unfortunately, it did. And just what you can do is if you want to, just you've already pulled a spear out of it, right? I'm assuming. The thing that was sticking it?
No, I haven't tried to pull it out yet.
Pull it out. And then let the bulb just sit for a couple weeks and let that spot try to heal itself before you even plant it.
Well, how would the bulb ever get moisture?
It doesn't need moisture right now. You're trying to let this wound from it getting stabbed by something heal. So you don't need moisture in that circumstance. So just kind of leave it alone for 1 or 2 weeks. Then, get that 4-inch pot, like I said, with potting mix. Then, put it in the pot with the top of the amaryllis bulb, the top, let's say, half inch or so above the potting mix, and then put it in a sunny window and just kind of leave it alone, and then the foliage should start emerging.
Okay. I can do that.
And then when the foliage starts, it's going to elongate. The foliage will ultimately end up about any place between 8 to 12 inches. Just leave it alone. Let that foliage stay until next September or so. And then at that time, you're going to take action to try to trigger the flowering cycle again.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for the information.
Sure. So, again, let that wound heal. So get that spear or whatever is hole, you know, poked a hole in it. And hopefully it's not a hole. But if it is, just even if it isn't, just let the bulb dry and for a week or two.
Okay. Okay, right now it's still got buds on it.
So it's still flowering?
Yes.
Oh, well, then don't do any of this until it finishes flowering. Then cut that flower stalk off. I misunderstood that.
Okay, thank you. I'll do that.
Right. The petals will start shrinking, and then as soon as that starts, you know, shriveling, and as soon as that starts happening, just cut the flower stalk off down about, let's say, a quarter or a half inch above the bulb.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Sure, my pleasure.
Okay, bye.
See you. And now let's head over from Linda's yard over to Bunny's. Hi, Bunny.
Hi, Mike. I like to plant seeds in the spring, especially zinnias. But the foliage always gets really bad, like it's dead. The flowers always bloom and they're pretty, but what causes the foliage to look so bad?
It's basically our humidity. A lot of times they will, you know, I mean, they can turn brown, but a lot of times they get powdery mildew on them, which is kind of a white coating on them. And it's just one of those inherent problems that zinnias have in our part of the country.
Oh, I see. So nothing, I could use anything on it.
No, you're really not going to stop that.
Okay. I just love to plant the seeds to watch them grow.
Right. No, I mean, they're great. My brother has been planting some zinnias from plants that he's had originally a long time ago, and he just gathers the seed at the end of the season and holds it through the wintertime and then plants it out again in the following springtime.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, I might try that. That sounds really neat.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. Well, that's wonderful. Thank you so much.
Sure. My pleasure. And we do have phone lines open, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. As you head out and start looking around in your yard and your lawn and everything else, those cool season annual weeds are still there. And more and more, especially the chickweed, it's got small, let's say the size, a little bit less than the size of a dime, round foliage, not round, but I guess disc shape. And it's really rampant right now. Other things that are going to be out there, there's going to be some henbit, and that's in the same family as mint. So if you see something you don't know exactly what it is, just reach down and feel the stem. And if the stem is square, then it is in the mint family, and that means it's probably henbit. And that, again, is another cool season annual weed. There's several other types that are going to be out there. So you can either go ahead and use an herbicide, broadleaf weed killer on them. You can pull them or do whatever you want to, but get them under control because they're continuing to drop seed. And that seed is just going to lay there until next August, and then it's going to start germinating again. That's when you'd be, you know, putting out a pre-emergent if you wanted to kill it off that way. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Get ready for women's Billikens basketball action tonight as they take on Fordham. Pregame 6:47, tip at 7. Hear it here on your home for Billikens basketball. KMOX.
Yes, folks, the last few days of January, so winter's almost over. Well, not truly, but still, things are going to start. The days are going to elongate, more time. That's going to basically, the soil temperatures are going to warm up as a result of that. And then we're going to start to see some of the buds swelling. So just keep an eye out in your landscape for anything at all that might be questionable. And then what you could do, you can always call the garden hotline. Or if you have something, you know, a particular branch, you can always take it to your favorite garden center and let them take a look at it. And if it's, whether it's a branch of a deciduous tree or a broadleaf evergreen that you're just concerned about spotting or anything else, find out what's going on, because getting things taken care of early on is just like with anything. Get it taken care of early on, you prevent, you know, major type of damage. So just kind of keep that in mind. This is a time of year, too, where you can do still some deep root feeding on your trees, your deciduous trees or your evergreen trees. And that's where you auger holes around the, you know, a circumstance or a circular, let's say, series of holes around the tree all the way from about halfway out from the trunk to the drip line. Auger these holes and then backfill them with compost. So you've still got an opportunity or a time to do that because of the temperature. Once we get beyond that, then it's probably not advisable to do that. But just realize it's a good thing to do because you're not feeding the plants necessarily. What you're doing is feeding the soil, and the soil is what is crucial for good plant growth, healthy plant growth. So that's what is really extremely important. So if you do have any questions, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Other things that you need to be thinking about as the days are, you know, as I said before, getting longer. I notice in my landscape, I've got quite a few bulbs planted that I got from Brightside St. Louis over the years, and I'm starting to see some of the bulb foliage coming up. This is areas between my driveway and where the garage is and everything else. And the foliage is probably about 2 inches. This is a time, too, also that you can think about. Now, it's going to be kind of cold for the next few days, so I'm not going to do it then. But as soon as you start to see spring flowering bulb foliage showing, then that's a good time to go ahead and give them a fertilizing. And I like to use a fertilizer that's a powder that you mix in water and then you can just pour it right onto it. So that is, you know, something to keep in mind that you can do that will help sort of like keep your bulbs healthy as long as they possibly can. Let's head over to Ellen's yard. Hi, Ellen. Oh, Eileen, sorry.
Hi, I'm sorry. When I first turned you on, I heard you talking about the molds. I got them infected again, and 2 years ago, I paid somebody to come take care of them. They're all over my front yard. What did you recommend doing?
Basically, I mean, setting the traps, or this gentleman that called, what he has, he went to his favorite garden center, and he got this product that you can inject into the mold tunnels where they're active, and what it is it sort of gives them, it fools the moles. They think it's an earthworm, so they go ahead and eat it, and then consequently it's poisonous, and that kills them.
And what was the name of this?
I don't know specifically what product he had, so just go to your favorite garden center and tell them that you want an injection to go into a mold tunnel.
Yeah, because I have MSD put big sewers in my backyard. I've got a big yard in the backyard and in the front. And, I mean, I paid a lot of money 2 years ago to get supposedly them gone. They're all back again.
Well, I mean, if...
Okay, so I'll just go to the garden center and ask them.
Yeah, exactly. That's the best thing
to do. I called MSD, and they said, that's part of having the sewer. Sorry. They literally said that to me.
Yeah, so... I mean, you can go to the big box stores, but you're not going to find good staff. Go to a year-round garden center. That's going to be a better place to go.
Where's one in North County?
I would say you might have to go into St. Charles. I don't know the North County.
Okay.
Like Frisella's Nursery in Defiance, they're a good...
Two out here in Lindbergh closed.
Right.
The nurseries are gone. The garden centers are gone.
Right. That's happened quite a bit in that particular area.
Yeah, so, all right, so I'll go to St. Charles to find, sorry. Like I said, and MSD just sort of said, well, that comes with the sewers.
I don't think moles come with sewers, but
I didn't think so either, but.
If they're bringing moles in with the sewer lines, that's a little scary.
Well, these are these huge drains, storm sewer things in backyards. And,
right.
Yeah. So, I mean, who knows? You wouldn't believe the animals I have in my backyard.
Well.
Okay.
Well, just, you know, good luck with it. And it's going to, you know, just realize that you've got to, anything you do, whether you're using the traps or whether you're using the injection or anything else, it's got to be in an active tunnel area or it doesn't do any good.
I can't use the traps because, again, I'm on a corner house. The school bus stops here. People stop here with picking kids up, dropping kids off. So I can't do anything like that in the front yard.
Yeah, I mean, what you...
I'm not even allowed a fence in the front yard.
Yeah. What you, I mean, potentially you could just turn a bucket upside down over them, but that would probably just be something that would attract the kids to it. And they...
Exactly. Give them something to play with in the yard. No, thank you.
Okay.
I mean, they're pretty good, but, you know, still and all.
Right.
If not, and then we have parents lined all the way up the street waiting for the school bus.
Right, exactly.
So, yeah, no. And the moles are having a great time. They think this is funny. I swear they do.
Well, I guess, you know, all this digging and stuff forced the earthworms to the areas that weren't disturbed, and that's what they're there for, because I'm assuming everybody in your neighborhood had the MSD stuff done?
Well, my yard.
Oh, just in your yard.
Yeah, I've got the big storm sewer in my backyard. My yard, I mean, I'm in the city of St. John.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's where they put it. That's what it is.
So
people, my yard's like 200 foot long.
Right.
So there's just some of the spend, then the rest of it, no.
So then everybody else's yard kind of drains down towards yours?
Yes.
Right. Well, I'm really surprised you've got a lot of mole activity, because the moles should be going other places that weren't disturbed, but you never
know. No, they're
know.
In the front yard.
Right. Okay.
They're not in my backyard where all that was done.
Right. So what, they were driven from the backyard, if they were there, into the front yard where it wasn't disturbed.
Yeah, because the backyard, nothing was going on back there. It's 150 feet. You know, I used to cut the grass, and that's it.
Right.
The garage is in the basement. You know, there's nothing back there. So I think they were having a great time till
absolutely
the storm sewer got in. But, okay, well, thank you. I will go. I'll go to St. Charles. Because
yep.
Like I said, our two garden centers closed.
Right.
Okay, thank you, and I appreciate your program. Don't stop. Thank you.
Thanks, and now let's head over to John's yard. Hi, John.
Hello.
Hi.
I was listening when you talked to the woman who had the amaryllis on a base with a wire.
Right.
Well, I had one of those. Someone gave me one a couple of years ago, and the bulb won't grow because the roots have been cut off of it.
Well, generally, when you get an amaryllis, you're not going to have roots. So that's
these have been cut off, so I could see where they'd cut them off.
Right.
I guess they want to sell you a new one every year because it wouldn't grow. I tried to grow it, but no roots came out on it because the roots had been cut off and this wire thing had been put in there to hold it. And there was no soil with the plant. It just had a pot with that wire thing holding the bulb up.
Well, I'm surprised that no new root growth happened, even if they'd all been cut off, because you can go certain places and buy amaryllis bulbs that are not potted up or anything else, and they just look like a baseball. I mean, they're round all the way around. I mean, you can tell where the top is, but they still, by potting them up usually in a potting mix and, you know, setting them in a nice sunny location, the roots will emerge, and then the foliage will emerge as well. So I'm surprised you didn't have any luck with that happening.
No, I could see where they'd taken a knife and cut the roots all off. So
right.
And no new ones came out. So that must be the method this company uses.
Yeah, which is
so
not...
I just wanted to clear that up, because I don't think the woman will have any luck with this. The roots have been cut off.
Okay.
That was my experience with that. Now, I've gotten other times, and, you know, they'd have the roots on, and then you could keep them for any number of years.
Right.
Outside in the summertime. So. But I just thought I'd mention that in case that might be the case.
Okay. Well, thanks, John. I greatly appreciate it.
You're welcome. I always listen.
Thank you for having me on your show. Now let's head over to Ann's yard. Hi, Ann.
Yes. I was calling to ask, what's a good time for me to trim my smoke bush?
Basically, is this one that has a purple foliage, or is it a green one, or does it really matter?
The purple foliage.
Yeah. Anytime before the new growth begins, you can go ahead and prune them, because they're really, don't cut them back too far, because if you cut them back too far, then the buds that are along the stem that remain may be dysfunctional. So, don't cut any more than 20% off and get it done before, let's say, mid-March or so.
Okay, thank you.
Sure, my pleasure. And now let's head over to Gwen's yard. Hi, Gwen.
Hi. I'm calling about the lady that had the mold problem.
Uh-huh.
What I found out, you go online, there's a mixture that you can make up of cayenne, garlic powder, chili powder, and onion powder, and mix it in with water, and you run it, put it down in poke holes in the runners, and pour it down there, and it runs them off, because that's what I did for mine.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the smell, because they're certainly not going to taste it, and it's not going to poison them. So yeah,
it runs them off.
Well, that's great. Well, thanks for the insight.
She'll have to go online to find the exact proportion. But as I said, I've done it 2 years in a row, and I run them off.
Maybe you should start a business.
No. It's just an apartment. I put worms, put some fresh dirt down, some potting soil and stuff, because I was trying to grow lavender and stuff. And then I went and got some worms because I figured, this soil needs worms. And the mole said, oh, thank you for the dinner. It's like, no, you got to go. But I just wanted to go ahead and tell you that.
Well, great. Well, thank you.
Have a good day.
Yep. 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, phone lines open, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. As I said before, make sure that you're out. Like today is pretty good. It's going to be up in the 50s. So take a wander around and look for any of these kind of potentially weed problems, because it's going to be really trouble over and over and over again. Not only the perennial weeds are going to be problematic because they're coming back from the root system, but the cool season annual weeds will keep going until about May or so, and then they're just going to disappear. You'll think, okay, that took care of them. But they are continuing to drop those seeds, and those seeds will just lay there forever. Also realize that as these temperatures get warmer, then the insect activity is going to increase. And that's why I keep talking about, this is an opportunity or a time where you can still spray the dormant oil. And the dormant oil, what it is a horticultural oil that actually suffocates the insects pretty much at every, life stage that they have, everything from eggs to adults. So that's, in a pupa or anything else. But when the temperature gets warmer and the buds start opening, if you spray dormant oil, that's really trouble for those buds. So keep that in mind. There is a lightweight horticultural oil to spray that will do the suffocation once the buds start opening up. But right now, they're still pretty tight, and you can use it pretty easy. Let's head over to Mary's yard. Hi, Mary.
Hello.
Hi.
I just got the tail end of this mold treatment. And I have moles like you wouldn't believe. I have them in the front yard, the backyard, and there's also exit holes, it looks like, on some of the tunnels, especially like in the summer where they just look like they leave. They go out.
Well, they're just...
They're terrible, and they are still active. Not as bad as in the summer, but still I'm amazed at the earth that's been moved up all over the yard by the mold. It makes it hard to mow the lawn, too.
Right. Yeah, those piles of dirt are just definitely from the tunnel activity. They have a series of two tunnels. The tunnel at the surface, that's the one where they're looking for something to eat. Then they have one that goes below that that takes them back to their sleeping den area. And, you know, when it's, the weather's really cold or there's really not much activity as far as insects, you know, consequently, then they just kind of go back there and take a nap. And then the females this time of year, are it's getting really soon where they're going to start having, you know, babies. And then the activity is going to get worse and worse and worse.
Yeah. And I'm hesitant to use the worms because I have cats that go outside. And I'm afraid if they find the mole and they may eat it, you know, then they would be poisoned by the worms too, probably.
Well, I guess that's, you know, that's a potential problem. But the cats are not digging down into the mole tunnels, are they?
Well, that, no, they're not. That's true. They're not. I did have one cat I used to feed who was an outside cat. I didn't have a mole problem. He loved to kill moles. I don't know how he got them, but I always saw little dead moles around my property.
You're kidding.
No, it was great. I wish I had him back. Believe me, they're just flourishing. But what was the powder that lady said she used?
It was a whole mixture of different types of, you know, cayenne peppers and this's and that's. And she said, go online. You can, you know, to find out the exact amount and the exact, you know, product.
Okay, I might check that out because they are definitely driving me crazy. And they are in my front and the back and they're everywhere. And I tried to flush them out last year. I put water down in the tunnel and that didn't really work. They just went to another part of the yard.
Yeah, exactly. That's, you can't flood them out, really. And it, you must, people that are having the mold problems, they must have a pretty good yard because, again, without earthworms, the moles are not going to be there. People say grub control gets rid of moles. No, they just only eat grubs if they happen to stumble across one as they're tunneling around after the earthworms. But their main diet is earthworms and grubs. Grub control does not really get rid of moles either.
Right. Okay. And I have one other question. I called about this before and I haven't really done anything about it, but I had a little bit of gas left in my lawnmower and I didn't really run it out of the mower. And I don't think it had fuel stabilizer in it. So on warm days like today, if I can get it started, is that okay to do to start it and everything?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Because I'm assuming it's in your garage. People, you know, if it's sitting in the garage, too, I mean, condensation due to moisture changes or moisture creation because of the temperature changing in your garage and things like that, that's why you want to get that out of there. And then you can put just brand new, you know, pure, let's say, pure gasoline in it.
Right. But it's okay to run out the gas that's already in it?
Yes.
That's okay. And I don't have to add fuel stabilizer to it or anything? It doesn't have much. It's just a little bit.
Yeah. So, yeah, just go ahead and run it, you know, and then, you know, basically what I'm still using my mower, and people think I'm crazy because they see me out there, and I have Zoysia lawn, which is totally brown now. And I'm cutting my Zoysia. But what I'm doing also is we live across the street from Christie Park, and the wind blows the leaves from the park into our yard. So I'm basically bagging up all the leaves with the mower rather than raking because I get a little tired. My wrists and everything get a little tired of raking. So it's just much easier to push a mower. And then I chop up all of the stuff, and then I take it to the yard waste dumpsters.
Yeah, I've done that before. Okay, all right. Is it okay if I do leave it a little bit longer and wait till we really start getting maybe at least a solid half week or week of warmer weather and then start it up?
Sure. It's not going to make that much difference.
Okay, great. It's in a shed, so it's protected. So. Yeah.
Great.
Okay, all right. Well, thanks for the information. I listen every Saturday, and I love the show.
Well, thanks for having me on your show. As you know, if you weren't there, I would not be here. Thank you very much. And see, if we got one more call. We're going to try to get them in before we go to break.
Lemonade! Fresh squeeze lemonade! Lemonade? Oh, nuts.
Is your business struggling to be seen, not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, line starts here.
So, James is talking to her. And let's see, who is we looking at? Dottie. Hi, Dottie.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
This is Dottie in Chesterfield. Yeah, dealing with, I'm going to shut the radio off. Okay, dealing with moles. Yeah, oh, we've got a lot of moles, a lot. And when I had my Jack Russell Terriers, no moles, no right. moles. So my suggestion is buy a Jack Russell Terrier. They're wonderful pets, and they're small dogs and really smart. They will take care of your moles. Jack Russell Terriers, they'll listen and listen, cock their head. Then they'll dig and dig and dig and dig, and then they'll bring them up and shake them, and it's dead. So I had mole control with lemonade and latte, my Jack Russells.
Wow, that sounds great. Well, thanks for the insight there.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Yeah, there's certain dogs will certainly go after them. There's no getting around it. And sounds like Jack Russell Terriers. I had larger dogs myself. I can't honestly say. This is when I was living in Webster, and my dogs were not, they didn't dig after the moles at all. So anyway, but if you do have any questions or concerns, we got another hour of the show, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Back after the news.
Now, at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Thank you, Scott. And this is the KMOX Garden Hotline second hour. And that means the tip of the trowel, which is a special recognition of individual group or situation that's made an impression on me this past week. And it's brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. But right now, if you have any questions, concerns, or comments about your plant world, why not give us a call at 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120, and then we can talk about it. And thanks for inviting me onto your show, where discussions can range from making a plant selection or caring for or what should be done in the peak season or the humdrum times of the year, with your annuals, with your spring, summer bulbs, with your herbs, vegetables, or fruit trees. How about your evergreen or herbaceous type ground covers, your perennials, cascading down house plants, cool or warm season lawns, shrubs, or classic roses? Oh boy, there's so much stuff potentially you can grow outside. And conifers, deciduous trees, annuals, perennials, vines, water gardens, and your fountains too as well. Or how about your koi? And I'll share my thoughts, but please remember my answers, comments, and opinions is not the only garden path that you can take to achieve your desired results, but strictly offered for you to consider. Another very important player in this game is James. He answers the phone, pushes all the buttons and everything else. So when you call, all he needs is your first name, and then he'll put you up on the computer screen, and then I will talk to you in the order that you called. And I'm Mike Miller. I've been hosting the Garden Hotline since 1994. And besides, on Saturday morning during our get-together, I can come to your plant world and on-site consultation, which is a walk and talk. You can go to my website, www.mikemillerdesigns.com. And on the homepage is going to be my email address and phone number. The tip of the trowel is brought to you by St. Louis Composting. And the tip of the trowel today goes out to, again, there's so many people that are doing really nice work in their yards. I walk through the neighborhoods a lot, and I'm just amazed at really nice landscapes. And it doesn't mean they're spectacular this time of year by any means, but I can tell that they're really conscientious with what they're doing, how they're taking care of the plant material that they have. And so a tip of the trowel goes out to all the homeowners that, and I know that for the most part, it's people doing the work themselves. Yes, there are landscape contractors that do some work. There's no getting around it. And they're fine. They're great, too. But the homeowners with the selection of plant materials, sometimes they've inherited plant materials that weren't necessarily the best plant materials to have, but they're working with them. And then sometimes you just have to take, you know, certain things out. I've had to do that when we moved from Soulard to South City. There was a couple plants that were just in the wrong place, and so I had to take them out. And that's, you know, I mean, that's kind of the whole thing with the plant world. Everything, nothing is permanent. So tip of the trowel to all the homeowners working in their yards. Greatly appreciate it. Let's go ahead and take a couple calls before we take a break. Let's head over to Steve's yard. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Mike. This is your old neighbor in Soulard.
Yes.
Steve Katsinas.
Right.
Hey, so listen, I got this China Girl holly that I planted probably about 25 years ago in our backyard. And I have since manicured that bush that I got when it was about 3 foot tall, and it's now a two-story tree in the backyard. And it's spectacular, particularly this time of year when it's full of red berries.
Right.
And I'm really worried about the tree right now because after we had that, you know, extreme cold over Christmas, I've got holly leaf scorch going on. And literally I can see from looking out of the second story of the house, the second bedroom in the back, is like about a third of the leaves have dropped off the tree on the top half, and all of the stuff in the middle. And when I noticed it was, you know, right after the cold. You know, holly leaves lose their hollies will drop their old leaves, you know, usually in the spring.
Right.
But they all fell off the tree and are all green. And then, you know, it's just like totally bare on the top. And I'm really worried that the tree may have been permanently damaged in the cold. Or, you know, are those leaves going to come back? I mean, what's this thing going to look like now?
Well, it's a little bit hard to say, so there's not really too much you can do as far as you can't take a cutting of the of a branch and bring it inside to see if any of the buds are still functional. If there's still flexibility in the stems or the, you know, the branches or whatever, then that means that branch didn't get killed off. It was only the sort of the aesthetic value of being lost because the foliage dropped. So it's just going to be a matter of waiting until we get to, you know, probably early, mid-April or something like that. Where the foliage has fallen off, if there's still functional buds there, it should be pushing out the foliage by then at the earliest, and then by mid-June at the latest. And if you don't see any kind of new foliage coming off in those particular areas by mid-June, then I would say you should go ahead and just cut those, you know, branches off.
Okay, because, you know, I didn't know how far back on the stem the new leaves are going to push out.
Right. They should go all the way to the end. It should replace, you know, if the branches or the twig is still functional, it should still be able to push out new foliage throughout the entire length.
Okay. Okay, that's good. That's the key, what you just said right there. I was just... I haven't paid close attention, and I didn't know, you know, how long, you know, if the leaves are only going to come out on the new growth or the new end of the tips of the stems and all of that. So, okay. Well, I just figured I was going to have to wait and see, but I mean, it's really sad. It looks terrible. And I've seen a couple of other holly bushes around the neighborhood,
right?
You know, where they all look the same right now, and I know it was just the way the wind blew around.
Yes.
And the sub-zero temperatures with the wind chills is what killed everything.
Absolutely. All the broadleaf evergreens just took a beating unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. All right, well, thanks for your help.
Sure, my pleasure. Nice talking to you.
Always, yes.
Steve lived right across, kind of diagonal from where Tracy and I lived in Soulard. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Nearly a century of informing, entertaining, and serving St. Louis. KMOX.
We've had a lot of questions about moles today, and just realize you can get rid of the moles in your yard. But if you have a nice yard, again, and you, that means you got earthworms, other moles are going to be attracted towards your yard. So it's an ongoing battle. There's no getting around it. Let's head over to Chris's yard. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Mike. How you doing today?
Very good.
Good. Hey, I had a couple questions. At the beginning of the show, you talked about putting boreholes around trees and dropping in compost and all of that. And I had a question. I have a backhoe, a tractor with a post hole digger, and I think it's about a 4 or 6 inch bit. If I were to use that and fill the hole, would that be a good way to do that, or is that too big, too much? How deep do I go? That kind of thing.
Well, you're only going to go down about 6 inches because basically the feeder roots, you know, of the tree are near the surface. And again, you're not feeding the tree, you're feeding the soil. So you could, you know, go with your, it seems like that bit would be a little bit big, but you could do it. But generally when you're using the earth auger, it's about a 1 inch in diameter, you know, auger bit. And you put those holes about 2 feet apart. And as you do the circle around the tree, and then you go out another 2 feet in another circle. But I'd probably do, I would be a little bit concerned about using, you know, a bit the size you're talking about.
Okay. Well, I'll see if they make smaller ones, too. And I'm just, I like simple if I can do it. Anyway.
I understand. And you got the equipment.
Yeah. And I got the equipment, and I get to be lazy, okay? anyway, the second question I had is, you and I have talked about moving cedars in my property, and I've just not been able to get to the point where I was ready to do that. But I'm hoping to get to there this spring. And one of the things that I'm thinking about doing, and I wanted your opinion on it, I want to go back to the other question quickly. I have wood mulch that I pick up, and it's free from one of the places out here. I was wondering if I could mix that with dirt and put it in the holes we just talked about.
No, is that raw wood like that hasn't been composted actually binds up nutrients and causes more problems than it's going to do good.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Okay. So my second question, what I was considering doing, this is down along a lake and near a fence that I need to restore some boundary trees. And what I was going to do is take a backhoe and dig a trench along there and just get the compost and the dirt and everything and drop. I moved some that was like 8 foot and another that was 10 foot, and they seemed to be doing so-so. So I think I'm going to drop down to like all four-foot trees and just put these in the trench, use some root stimulator and stuff like that, and just cover them up with the mulch dirt and then keep them watered and do all that stuff. Is that and I'll also tie them so that they don't get blown over by the wind. Is that something that sounds like it might work?
It may work. Just make sure you don't plant them too deep. Because it sounds like you're going to be digging a hole that's fairly deep. And then consequently, even though you're putting, you know, let's say good organic materials back in there for them to grow into, if there's any kind of settling, consequently, then that means there's going to be water puddling around these transplants. And that's going to be, you know, to the detriment of the work you've done.
Okay. Yeah. What I was going to try to do is use the backhoe and dig the trench just deep enough, and then maybe if I need to raise one of them up, put something under it to raise it up if I got different root sizes, or hand dig it, you know, a little deeper, a little all that.
Right.
But do like you said, make sure that the root ball is slightly above grade.
Right.
And then manage the water around it that runs down along the shore.
That's exactly right.
Okay. So just, and then keep, when would I start fertilizing those with the spikes and stuff?
I would say not for a couple years, because the root system's not going to be developed enough. And the tree spikes are not really all that functional. Again, if you've got good quality soil, you really don't need to do additional fertilizing. Let the soil feed the transplants, as opposed to you just adding this organic material. Because the tree spikes, I mean, you could, I mean, people do use them, and they've been very satisfied with them. So what I would probably do is try a couple in 2 years or so. Try a couple trees with the tree spikes, and then have a couple trees that you didn't do the tree spikes, and see what the difference is.
Ooh, that's a good point. Okay, yeah, these are replacing about 30-foot tall cedars that a neighbor cut down.
Oh,
and I need to replace them because they won't.
Right.
And so I'm just growing a new wall. Anyway, I appreciate all your advice, Mike. Hey, have a great Saturday.
You do the very same thing. Now let's head over to Bill's yard. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Mike. How are you today?
Very good.
Hi, Mike.
Yes.
Yeah, I have been saving all my, as they used to say, the old people used to say, all my rinds, but I think it's called peelings now. And I've been throwing them in a compost pile that is kind of laying dormant right now. How can I jazz it up when it starts getting warmer weather?
Just keep turning it, rotate it. That's the best thing you can do.
Okay. Also, I want it. There's raccoons have been getting in it to pick out what they want. So I've been feeding them too. So just make it. And then in the spring, just make it into a regular compost pile.
Right, exactly. But just keep rotating, you know, anything that you're adding, rotate it in with, you know, the existing stuff.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure, my pleasure.
I appreciate you. Thank you.
Thank you. And now let's head over to Nancy's yard. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, Mike. I have a question. I have two golden unanimous bushes. And last year they were beautiful. They were full and they had the green and yellow foliage. And yesterday, since it got warm, I went outside to look at some of my landscaping plants, and I couldn't believe it. All the leaves, except for about 30, were laying on the ground underneath it.
Right.
And the leaves that were still on it almost looked like it had a black mold on the leaves. I mean, it's just bare now. Will they come back?
Well, it's going to be, you know, we've had a couple calls about some broadleaf evergreens, you know, be it a laurel, that was in the first hour, and the starting of the second hour was about hollies. All the broadleaf evergreens just took a brutal beating early when we had that cold snap way early in the season. And so it's just going to be a kind of a hit and miss type thing if they're going to be able to leaf out. You can go out and you just take a couple of the twigs and kind of move them around with your fingers and see if they're still flexible. If they're still flexible and they still look like where the, you know, on the stems or the twigs, there's a bud there, then they could leaf out. But there's no guarantee until the weather starts triggering the new growth for them to, you know, potentially fill in. So there's no way to know. I mean, you could take a cutting and try to bring it inside and put it in a, let's say, a vase of water or a bowl of water or whatever, and see if there's any kind of expansion of any of the buds. But I would say don't bother with that because it's not going to make much difference.
Yeah. Oh, I look at them now and it's so sad to
I know.
See what they look like.
Right.
And now what they look like.
Right.
So, okay. Keep my fingers crossed.
Yep.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Sure.
Bye.
My pleasure. Yeah, you and all the broadleaf evergreen growers, I mean, every neighborhood has a lot of broadleaf evergreens, and I mean, I have not, as I go walking around all over the place, I've not seen any, You know, and I don't go into people's backyards or anything like that, unless, of course, you have me over for a walk and talk. But besides that, any that have been out, I mean, they have all received some damage by that early cold spell. Let's head over to Sharon's yard now. Hi, Sharon.
Hi.
Hi.
I have an azalea bush, and it has something like lichen growing all over the stems. But it is still blooming in the spring, so I wondered what I can do about that if I need to.
No, if it's regular old lichen, that just means it's in this particular situation where the lichen was able to establish itself, and it doesn't really impact the azalea or really anything at all, whether it's a trunk of trees or anything. So I would say just that's part of the whole deal of, you know, having this particular plant in that location.
Okay, thanks. Sure. And the other thing is I have a hydrangea. it's about 3 feet tall, and I think I have it planted in the wrong place because it gets a lot of morning sun and it wilts, and then when the shade comes around, it perks up again. And I wondered if I could move that. It's about 3 feet tall. It's pretty old. So I didn't know if I should move it someplace else.
If it's, you know, if it perks back up, if it's just with the heat or the intensity of the sun early in the morning and it wilts as a result of that, that just means the root system hasn't really got well established.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's not as long as it, again, the leaves get rigid by the end of the, you know, later on in the day, then that's just how it is. So this particular plant, it might have been pot-bound when you bought it and you put it in the ground and you didn't, you know, let's say, tease the root system apart a little bit to encourage some new growth. But if it's, you know, as you said, it was 3 years old?
Yeah.
Yeah, so if it hasn't been able to sort of get enough root system to prevent that wilting down, then that just means the root ball is probably still the same exact size and shape as it was when you bought it.
Okay. The other thing is, I wondered if I should trim it, you know, it's pretty tall. I didn't know if I was supposed to cut it back or not.
Well, if it's only 3 feet tall, that's not very tall.
Okay.
So, I don't know, you know, I mean, there's lots of different hydrangeas, so depending upon the variety, does it flower?
Yes.
Okay. And is it flower in the springtime or in the summertime?
In the summer.
Okay, so it's probably, you know, it's one of those summer, obviously a summer bloomer, but I would say just, you know, kind of live with it as it is.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Sure. My pleasure. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. We do have phone lines open, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120.
I'm Dakota Hudson.
I'm Jordan Hicks.
I'm Cardinals pitcher Jack Flaherty.
I'm Tommy Edman.
I'm Cardinals outfielder Jordan Walker.
I'm Paul DeYoung.
I'm Woodson Contreras.
I'm Adam Wainwright.
And you're listening to the voice of the Cardinals, KMOX.
KMOX is Cardinals Radio.
Yes, we're heading back to the phones, and let's head over to John's yard. Hi, John.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
Mike, we have a burning bush that needs to be trimmed. It's about 7 foot tall. Can you tell my wife, Jeannie, when she should do this and how one correctly trims this tree?
Well, you can selectively just do, you know, with a pruner, one, let's say, branch at a time if you want to do it that way. But they're tough enough that you can actually use a hedge trimmer if you want. But don't take any more of than about 20% of the height off at one time. So, it's, you know, 20% off of 7 feet, you're going to take about a foot, 18 inches or so. That's a maximum, and you want to do it before any kind of new growth is visible.
So probably within a month.
Right.
Okay, great. Hey, I have a second question, a little off the garden path, if you don't mind.
Sure, go ahead.
How much credence do you have in Piscataway Phil?
I have no idea.
All right, Mike, you have a good day. Thanks.
Sure, you too. And now let's head over to another John's yard. Hi, John.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I have a
two ponytail palms, and they are in a pot about 7 inches. One is 4.5-inch plant wide, and the other is 3.5-inch, and he's in a 5.5-inch pot. Are they too root-bound? In other words, should I transplant them to a larger pot?
No, leave them alone. They are tough enough that they can handle it until, I mean, it's, I guess you've had them for an extended period of time, but don't want to be planted in, you know, a larger pot. They're going to do much better health-wise and everything else just to leave them where they are.
Fantastic. I thank you very much.
Yeah, and obviously you know how to take care of them because they don't want a whole lot of water. That could be the worst thing that you can do is overwatering them.
What would you think, twice a week?
No, that's way too much.
Oh, I guess I am overwatering them. Okay.
Well, I mean, if you've had them for a while and they're still successful, stick with it. But generally, that seems like too much water.
Okay, so once a week would be good?
Yes.
Just a little around the edge. Okay.
Right, exactly. And you
perfect.
Know, bright sun.
Thank you, Mike.
Okay, thank you. And now let's head over from John's yard to Tony's. Hi, Tony.
Okay, so once a week
would be good.
Hi, Mike. Hi. I got an area in South County that's about 20 feet wide by 100 feet long that has been overgrown for many years, and there is a lot of poison ivy in there in the growing with vines and under the trees. Is there anything natural that I can plant to get rid of that poison ivy?
No. There really isn't. There's nothing that can overgrow poison ivy, especially a well-established poison ivy stand, which this sounds like it is. But no, there's nothing that you can do at all other than physically getting rid of it, either with an herbicide like the Roundup for killing woody plant material. Regular Roundup won't even kill it. And you want to make sure that, or you can obviously dig it out, but that is a huge amount of effort. Again, with this situation that you've described, the root system is going to be extensive throughout the entire area.
Yeah, or would the Roundup damage the trees that are already established there?
That Roundup would only does damage if you spray it onto the foliage of stuff. That's how it's absorbed. So it doesn't go down into it deactivates when it hits the soil. So the other plant material should not be impacted by it.
Great. Thank you, Mike.
Yep. And again, it's got to be Roundup for killing woody plants. Regular Roundup will not work.
Perfect. Thanks again for the show.
Sure. My pleasure. And now let's go over to Leslie's. Hi, Leslie.
Hi, Mike. I appreciate your show.
Thanks.
I have rose bushes. I probably got about 7 of them, and they're in different areas of my yard. In the spring, they come out. They're beautiful. They're popping with roses. They're big roses. They're, all depends on, because they're all different kinds of bushes. By late spring, early summer, something is eating my leaves. I can't physically see anything. So it's not Japanese beetles or anything, but my leaves look like lace, and they just tear the plant apart.
Yeah, it might
It'll still produce roses, but the leaves are just trash.
Yeah, it might be thrips. So what you need to do is go to your favorite garden center, explain to them what you have, and then when mm-hmm. they give you the insecticide, spray the underside of the leaf and spray the stems.
Stems. Okay. I was afraid because it's been going on some years and they're beautiful. Everybody's like, look at your roses. That's a short period of time that I've got that. And I love my roses.
Right.
So can you spell that for me? What you said, thrips?
Yeah. Thrips.
Okay. Okay. I've been doing soapy water with a little bit of like vegetable oil on the bottoms of the leaves and the tops of the leaves. It seems to help a little bit. I've tried neem oil. I've tried everything.
Yeah.
Nothing,
I mean, you might try insecticidal soap if you want to, but again, if you've mm-hmm. tried all these other things, I'd go, go online, go to the Missouri Botanical Garden website and sure. check it out and see what they're going to recommend for the control.
Sure. All right. Thanks, Mike.
Sure. My pleasure. And now let's head over to Bill's. Hi, Bill.
Yeah, good morning, Mike. I want to thank you for your show. I have boxwood hedges, and they're about 3.5 feet tall, and I'd like to cut them back to about 1.5 feet. I realize I would lose the foliage, but is that okay, or is that too much? Or
that's probably too much. They're going to really look ugly if you cut them halfway back like that. So.
Well, I realize they would lose their foliage, but they're just getting to the point where they're growing over the sidewalk part right. of it now, and it's just I'd like to get them back to get them under control.
Well,
how far can I safely cut them back?
Probably no more than, let's say you say they're 3 feet. I wouldn't cut any more. You could do it over a period of time. Cut them back, you know, let's say 4 or 6 inches, and then wait for a year, and then cut them back another 4 or 6 inches. So, in other words, you're going to have to do it over an extended period of time.
Extended period of time.
Right.
Okay. Okay. Well, great. Thank you very much, and you have a great show. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Well, thank you. And 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. We have some phone lines open, and we'll be back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, realize that you might start seeing some fuzzy stuff in your lawn, and that could be a snow mold. You know, even though we haven't had that much snow, just from the humidity and everything else that wintertime presents. So just watch out for fungus problems in your lawn. If you start to see some fuzzy stuff on the blades of your grass, then I would say dig a small clump up, you know, 3 or 4 inches in diameter, and take it to your favorite garden center and let them diagnose what it is and then recommend a fungicide if you do need one. Let's head over to Ann's yard now. Hi, Ann.
Hello. Good
Hi.
Morning. The lady that called about the holes in her rose leaves,
right.
That's sawfly.
Sawfly? Okay.
Yeah. I think it's a tiny wasp that lays eggs. They hatch. They're on the underside of the rose leaves. They're little, tiny, maybe a pale green caterpillar, very tiny. Early in the season, you have to spray underneath the roses consistently. Once the damage is there, they kind of go back into the ground, I think. But the damage is done in the early spring, and then it's just there for the season.
Okay.
And it's once they're there every year.
So you can't control them?
Well, neem oil, the lady said she used neem oil, and you could maybe, but you have to spray their bodies. You have to see them,
right.
and you have to spray them on the underside of the leaves. And it's something you'd have to work on consistently throughout the week.
Right.
It's kind of a pain, but they're there, and they do that damage, and they're there every year henceforth.
Okay. Well, thank you. So it's your recommendation, it's sawflies.
I believe it's sawfly. I worked at a nursery. I was sort of the in-house rosarian for quite a few years.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for your insight.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah, and also there are systemic type insecticides where you can actually add them to the ground. The rose or the plant will uptake that, and then if any insect feeds onto the foliage, then that will kill them that way too. So, again, thank you very much for the insight on the sawflies. Let's go now to Mary's yard. Hi, Mary.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, I have a beautiful gardenia in my sunroom. It keeps getting new growth. It looks great, but it never blooms.
That's kind of the problem with some of the gardenias just in general. So even though it's nice and healthy and everything else, are you fertilizing at all?
No, I haven't.
You might try fertilizing. Get a fertilizer, for acid-loving plants because it is a broadleaf evergreen. And even though it can't grow outside here, I mean, there are parts of the country where it will grow outside, but it does need an acid-based fertilizer.
Okay. Well, I'll try that then. I appreciate your help.
Sure, my pleasure. And now let's head over to Wayne's yard. Hi, Wayne.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for taking my call. I'm going to live down in the country, and I've got lots of pecan shells I've been picking out. I got lots of grinding chips from stumps and walnuts. Are they good for anything, for as foliage or anything? Do you know?
As far as adding to the ground, I mean, you're going to have to, like, basically compost them so they'll break down. Just, you know, I mean, you could use them as a mulch on top of the ground, but beyond that, unless they're composted, they're not really going to help too much just to work them into the soil.
Oh, work them into the soil. All three of those would work?
Yeah, only
grinding if... grinding chips from stumps and the walnuts and pecans?
Yeah,
all three
only
of those.
If they've been composted, though. So don't just take the raw material and put it in the ground, because that's going to be detrimental as opposed to helpful.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And now let's go to Greg's yard. Hi, Greg.
How you doing?
Very good.
Yes, I have a ginkgo tree, and it's about 8 foot tall, but it seems to be splitting up at the top. The branches are splitting out. I want to make it maybe more round and, you know, made more uniform, and I was wondering about when and how to trim.
Really, with any kind of tree, other than the maples, the wintertime is a good time to prune, and also before the new, and wintertime before the new growth begins. So you want to get it done. You have probably up until maybe mid-March, then the buds are going to start opening up, and you don't want to prune
right.
it at that particular time.
Okay. So, like, at the base of the tree, can I cut it all the way back to the trunk?
So kind of up
it so I can see underneath a little bit.
Oh, yeah, you can limb it up if that's what you're talking about.
Yes.
If the branches are long, make sure that you cut them off in sections with the final cut leaving about a quarter inch stub or so.
Oh, okay, that's fine. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yep, and with this pruning this time, not just this time of year, but any kind of pruning anymore, I mean, a sealer or anything like that, don't bother with that. Days of old, the pruning sealers worked because they had lead in them. But when the Environmental Protection Agency, you know, said take the lead out of these type of products, then all it is cosmetic. So the wound is just there.
Okay, great. Because I don't want to lose this ginkgo tree. It's was given to my wife, so I don't want to ruin it.
Well, I mean... Unless you really are desperate to prune it, I would just leave it alone.
Yeah, I might even do that. It's just, I was hoping to maybe trim up the top a little bit to kind of gather the branches in a little bit. It's kind of splitting at the top.
Well, that's kind of their natural habit, is to be, you know, an open grower. So that's just...
Okay.
You're fighting the genetics.
Okay. Well, then I won't worry about shaping it then. I'll let her go.
Right. Sounds perfect.
All right, thanks a lot.
Yep, my pleasure. Yeah, it's too often, you know, we try to make things fit or conform to a shape that we like, and you're going kind of against the genetics of the tree. It's sort of like back in the 60s when everybody had straight hair like the Beatles. I tried to make my hair straight, and that did not work, and it was just a nightmare. So don't bother doing that. But again, just kind of make sure that you walk and through your yard. We're getting up into the 50s today. We're going to get colder in the week. But, you know, just wander around and, you know, spend some time outside and just take a look at the plant material and see if you see anything that's out of the ordinary. Because, I mean, we've had a lot of mole calls and things like that. But there's a lot of different kinds of mammals, be it rabbits, be it voles, whatever, that do some damage to the plant material by chewing on the bark. And the bark lower down on the tree. And bark is extremely important for any kind of woody plant material, because right below where the bark is, that's where the veins are. That's where the nutrients are transported from the ground, from the root system, up to where the foliage is, or the new twigs, or any kind of growth at all. So bark, whether you're hitting it with a mower, whether a wildlife type thing is chewing on it, or anything else, you got to make sure that the bark is, and if you have any kind of frayed bark due to any kind of, you know, let's say wildlife, any of the sheared stuff, any kind of the frayed stuff, cut that off. And what you want to do, that helps the cambium layer heal itself. So that's how a wound that happens will be healed, you know, doing it that way. So take a look around at all that kind of stuff. Also, as I said before, as the weather is starting to get warmer, start watching out for, you know, some of the insects, because some of them come out, you know, earlier in the season, and then that's where, like, the damage can be done before you even realize what's going on. Watch out for other things as well, as far as I've talked a couple times about the weeds in your landscape, and this is a good time of year to take a look around, not only to see what the plant material is, but also to see what your existing plants, and if you're trying to think about putting in some new plants, make sure that the plants that you select can fit into that space, because a lot of times when I visit people's homes, whoever planted some specific plants really never planned for mature size or mature growth. And consequently, then there's real problems with, let's say, branches overhanging the house or root systems up, you know, let's say uplifting sidewalks or driveways or things like that. Or like the gentleman who called and his boxwood was overgrowing the sidewalk. And so if they would have pushed it back maybe another foot when they originally planted, it wouldn't be problematic. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. I will see you next week.
The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
4-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120.
I'm Dakota Hudson.
I'm Jordan Hicks.
I'm Cardinals pitcher Jack Flaherty.
I'm Tommy Edmond.
I'm Cardinals outfielder Jordan Walker.
I'm Paul DeYoung.
I'm Woodson Contreras.
I'm Adam Wainwright.
And you're listening to the voice of the Cardinals, KMOX.
KMOX is Cardinals Radio.
Yes, we're heading back to the phones, and let's head over to John's yard. Hi, John.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
Mike, we have a burning bush that needs to be trimmed. It's about 7 foot tall. Can you tell my wife, Jeannie, when she should do this and how one correctly trims this tree?
Well, you can selectively just do, you know, with a pruner, one, let's say, branch at a time if you want to do it that way. But they're tough enough that you can actually use a hedge trimmer if you want. But don't take any more of than about 20% of the height off at one time. So, it's, you know, 20% off of 7 feet, you're going to take about a foot, 18 inches or so. That's a maximum, and you want to do it before any kind of new growth is visible.
So probably within a month.
Right.
Okay, great. Hey, I have a second question, a little off the garden path, if you don't mind.
Sure, go ahead.
How much credence do you have in Puscatani Phil?
I have no idea.
All right, Mike, you have a good day. Thanks.
Sure, you too. And now let's head over to another John's yard. Hi, John.
Hi, Mike. Hi. I have two ponytail palms, and they are in a pot about 7 inches. One is 4.5-inch plant wide, and the other is 3.5-inch, and he's in a 5.5-inch pot. Are they too root-bound? In other words, should I transplant them to a larger pot?
No, leave them alone. They are tough enough that they can handle it until, I mean, I guess you've had them for an extended period of time. But don't want to be planted in, you know, a larger pot. They're going to do much better health-wise and everything else. Just leave them where they are.
Fantastic. I thank you very much.
Yeah, and obviously you know how to take care of them because they don't want a whole lot of water. That could be the worst thing that you can do is overwatering them.
What would you think, twice a week?
No, that's way too much.
Oh, I guess I am overwatering them. Okay.
Well, I mean, if you've had them for a while and they're still successful, stick with it. But generally, that seems like too much water.
Okay, so once a week would be good?
Yes.
Just a little around the edge. Okay.
Right, exactly. And you
perfect.
Know, bright sun.
Thank you, Mike.
Okay, thank you. And now let's head over from John's yard to Tony's. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I got an area in South County that's about 20 feet wide by 100 feet long that has been overgrown for many years, and there is a lot of poison ivy in there, in the growing with vines and under the trees. Is there anything natural that I can plant to get rid of that poison ivy?
No. There really isn't. There's nothing that can overgrow poison ivy, especially a well-established poison ivy stand, which this sounds like it is. But no, there's nothing that you can do at all other than physically getting rid of it, either with an herbicide like the Roundup for killing woody plant material. Regular Roundup won't even kill it. And you want to make sure that, or you can obviously dig it out, but that is a huge amount of effort. Again, with this situation that you've described, the root system is going to be extensive throughout the entire area.
Yeah, or nothing. Would the Roundup damage the trees that are already established there?
That Roundup would only does damage if you spray it onto the foliage of stuff. That's how it's absorbed. So it doesn't go down into it deactivates when it hits the soil. So the other plant material should not be impacted by it.
Great. Thank you, Mike.
Yep. And again, it's got to be Roundup for killing woody plants. Regular Roundup will not work.
Perfect. Thanks again for the show.
Sure. My pleasure. And now let's go over to Leslie's. Hi, Leslie.
Hi, Mike. I appreciate your show.
Thanks.
I have rose bushes. I probably got about 7 of them, and they're in different areas of my yard. In the spring, they come out. They're beautiful. They're popping with roses. They're big roses. They're, all depends on, because they're all different kinds of bushes. By late spring, early summer, something is eating my leaves. I can't physically see anything. So it's not Japanese beetles or anything, but my leaves look like lace, and they just tear the plant apart.
Yeah, it might
It'll
be
still produce roses, but the leaves are just trash.
Yeah, it might be thrips. So what you need to do is go to your favorite garden center, explain to them what you have, and then when they give you the insecticide, spray the underside of the leaf and spray the stems.
Stems. Okay. I was afraid because it's been going on some years and they're beautiful. Everybody's like, look at your roses. That's a short period of time that I've got that. And I love my roses.
Right.
So can you spell that for me? What you said? Thrips?
Yeah. Thrips.
Okay. Okay. I've been doing soapy water with a little bit of vegetable oil on the bottoms of the leaves and the tops of the leaves. It seems to help a little bit. I've tried neem oil. I've tried everything. Nothing,
I mean, you might try insecticidal soap if you want to, but again, if you've tried all these other things, I'd go, or go online, go to the Missouri Botanical Garden website and check it out and see what they're going to recommend for the control.
Sure. All right, thanks, Mike.
Sure, my pleasure. And now let's head over to Bill's. Hi, Bill.
Yeah, good morning, Mike. I want to thank you for your show. I have boxwood hedges, and they're about 3.5 feet tall, and I'd like to cut them back to about 1.5 feet. I realize I would lose the foliage, but is that okay, or is that too much?
That's probably too much. They're going to really look ugly if you cut them halfway back like that. So.
Well, I realize they would lose their foliage, but they're just getting to the point where they're growing over the sidewalk part of it now, and it's just I'd like to get them back to get them under control.
Well,
how far can I safely cut them back?
probably no more than, let's say you say they're 3 feet. I wouldn't cut any more. You could do it over a period of time. Cut them back, you know, let's say 4 or 6 inches, and then wait for a year and then cut them back another 4 or 6 inches. So, in other words, you're going to have to do it over an extended period of time.
Right. Okay. Okay, well, great. Thank you very much, and you have a great show. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Well, thank you. And 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. We have some phone lines open, and we'll be back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, realize that you might start seeing some fuzzy stuff in your lawn, and that could be a snow mold. You know, even though we haven't had that much snow, just from the humidity and everything else that wintertime presents. So just watch out for fungus problems in your lawn. If you start to see some fuzzy stuff on the blades of your grass, then I would say dig a small clump up, you know, 3 or 4 inches in diameter, and take it to your favorite garden center and let them diagnose what it is and then recommend a fungicide if you do need one. Let's head over to Ann's yard now. Hi, Ann.
Hello. Good morning. The lady that called about the holes in her rose leaves,
right.
That's sawfly.
Sawfly? Okay.
Yeah, I think it's a tiny wasp that lays eggs. They hatch. They're on the underside of the rose leaves. They're little, tiny, maybe a pale green caterpillar, very tiny. Early in the season, you have to spray underneath the roses consistently. Once the damage is there, they kind of go back into the ground, I think. But the damage is done in the early spring, and then it's just there for the season.
Okay.
And it's once they're there every year.
So you can't control them?
Well, neem oil, the lady said she used neem oil, and you could maybe, but you have to spray their bodies. You have to see them,
right.
And you have to spray them on the underside of the leaves. And it's something you'd have to work on consistently throughout the week.
Right.
It's kind of a pain, but they're there and they do that damage, and they're there every year henceforth.
Okay. Well, thank you. So it's your recommendation, it's sawflies.
I believe it's sawfly. I worked at a nursery. I was sort of the in-house rosarian for quite a few years.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for your insight.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah, and also there are systemic type insecticides where you can actually add them to the ground. The rose or the plant will uptake that, and then if any insect feeds onto the foliage, then that will kill them that way too. So again, thank you very much for the sort of the insight on the sawflies. Let's go now to Mary's yard. Hi, Mary.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, I have a beautiful gardenia in my sunroom. It keeps getting new growth. It looks great, but it never blooms.
That's kind of the problem with some of the gardenias just in general. So even though it's nice and healthy and everything else, are you fertilizing at all?
No, I haven't.
You might try fertilizing. Get a fertilizer, for acid-loving plants because it is a broadleaf evergreen. And even though it can't grow outside here, I mean, there are parts of the country where it will grow outside, but it does need an acid-based fertilizer.
Okay. Well, I'll try that then. Yeah. I appreciate your help.
Sure, my pleasure. And now let's head over to Wayne's yard. Hi, Wayne.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for taking my call. I'm gonna live down in the country, and I've got lots of pecan shells I've been picking out. I got lots of grinding chips from stumps and walnuts. Are they good for anything, as far as foliage or anything? Do you know?
As far as adding to the ground, I mean, you're going to have to basically compost them so they'll break down. Just you could use them as a mulch on top of the ground, but beyond that, unless they're composted, they're not really going to help too much. Just to work them into the soil.
Oh, work them into the soil. All three of those would work?
Yeah, only
grinding chips from stumps and walnuts and pecans.
Yeah, only if they've been composted, though. So don't just take the raw material and put it in the ground, because that's going to be detrimental as opposed to helpful.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And now let's go to Greg's yard. Hi, Greg.
How you doing?
Very good.
Yes, I have a ginkgo tree, and it's about 8 foot tall, but it seems to be splitting up at the top. The branches are splitting out. I want to make it maybe more round, you know, maybe more uniform, and I was wondering about when and how to trim.
Really, with any kind of tree, other than the maples, the wintertime is a good time to prune, and also before the new, and wintertime before the new growth begins. So you want to get it done. You have probably up until maybe mid-March. Then then the buds are going to start opening up, and you don't want to prune it at that particular time.
Okay. So, like at the base of the tree, can I cut it all the way back to the trunk?
So kind of up
it so I can see underneath a little bit.
Oh yeah, you can limit up if that's what you're talking about.
Yes.
If the branches are long, make sure that you cut them off in sections, with the final cut leaving about a quarter inch stub or so.
Oh, okay, that's fine. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yep, and with this pruning this time, not just this time of year, but any kind of pruning anymore, I mean, a sealer or anything like that, don't bother with that. Days of old, the pruning sealers worked because they had lead in them. But when the Environmental Protection Agency, said take the lead out of these type of products, then all it is cosmetic. So the wound is just there.
Okay, great. Because I don't want to lose this ginkgo tree. It was given to my wife, so I don't want to ruin it.
Well, I mean, unless you really are desperate to prune it, I would just leave it alone.
Yeah, I might even do that. It's just, I was hoping to maybe trim up the top a little bit to kind of gather the branches in a little bit. It's just, it's kind of splitting at the top.
Well, that's kind of their natural habit, is to be an open grower. So that's just...
Okay.
You're fighting the genetics.
Okay. Well, then I won't worry about shaping it then. I'll let her go.
Right. Sounds perfect.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Yep. My pleasure. Yeah, it's too often... we try to make things fit or conform to a shape that we like, and you're going kind of against the genetics of the tree. It's sort of like back in the 60s when everybody had straight hair like the Beatles. I tried to make my hair straight, and that did not work, and it was just a nightmare. So don't bother doing that. But again, just kind of make sure that you walk and through your yard. We're getting up into the 50s today. We're going to get colder in the week, but, just wander around and, spend some time outside and just take a look at the plant material and see if you see anything that's out of the ordinary. Because, I mean, we've had a lot of mole calls and things like that, but there's a lot of different kinds of mammals, be it rabbits, be it voles, whatever, that do some damage to the plant material by chewing on the bark and the bark lower down on the tree. And bark is extremely important for any kind of woody plant material, because right below where the bark is, that's where the veins are. That's where the nutrients are transported from the ground, from the root system, up to where the foliage is or the new twigs or any kind of growth at all. So bark, whether you're hitting it with a mower, whether a wildlife type thing is chewing on it, or anything else, you got to make sure that the bark is, and if you have any kind of frayed bark due to any kind of, let's say wildlife, any of the sheared stuff, any kind of the frayed stuff, cut that off. And what you want to do, that helps the cambium layer heal itself. So that's how a wound that happens will be healed, doing it that way. So take a look around at all that kind of stuff. Also, as I said before, as the weather is starting to get warmer, start watching out for, some of the insects, because some of them come out earlier in the season, and then that's where, the damage can be done before you even realize what's going on. watch out for other things as well. As far as I've talked a couple times about the weeds in your landscape, and this is a good time of year to take a look around, not only to see what the plant material is, but also to see what your existing plants, and if you're trying to think about putting in some new plants, make sure that the plants that you select can fit into that space, because a lot of times when I visit people's homes, whoever planted some specific plants really never planned for mature size or mature growth. And consequently, then there's real problems with, let's say, branches overhanging the house or root systems up, you know, let's say uplifting sidewalks or driveways or things like that. Or like the gentleman who called and his boxwood was overgrowing the sidewalk. And so if they would have pushed it back maybe another foot when they were originally planted, it wouldn't be problematic. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. I will see you next week.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, you'll hear true stories that will intrigue you, inspire you, and make you laugh.
He said, "Is there anything in your diet that might be spiking your blood sugar?" I said, "Sometimes I eat pizza until I'm unconscious." He said, "I think that might be it."
For real stories live on stage from comedians, astronauts, accountants, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.